This episode, questions and answers. We received an email from John O. asking some questions about the handyman business. John wants to go full-time and is looking for options. Well, as usual, we have them. Welcome to the Handyman Pros Radio Show. Home improvement and maintenance tips from the pros. Thanks for listening to another edition of the Handyman Pros Radio Show, where our goal is to help save you time, money, and aggravation on your home maintenance and repair. This edition's entitled Questions and Answers, and to help me explain, I'm here with my ever-cheerful co-host and old buddy, Johnny. Johnny.
Here I am.
What's been going on this week? You got a good story for us this week?
It was pretty exciting. I took apart my shower door and resealed the whole thing. How's that?
Hey, that's exciting.
Well, what was interesting is, you know, now there's standing water where there was no standing water before.
How'd you manage that? That's an accomplishment in and of itself.
Well, it makes one think, where was that water going before I resealed it?
That's the most interesting thing. Of course, you were wondering where that stain in your ceiling downstairs was, right? Yeah. Surprise. Right.
Anyways, you know. Quick little tip. Anytime you have any issues with your shower, check your curb first in the shower.
Yeah, well,
right?
It seems like common sense, but we know it not to be the case.
But wasn't
that
the one that you had, right? Underneath where the tile wraps over the top of itself on the curb.
I've had that myself and
exactly.
had that with several customers.
Exactly.
Same thing.
So there's a
particularly if it's segmented the top. So I have gone to whenever somebody does an install to using a solid piece across the top, either ceramic or a piece of marble or something solid. But many of the pieces I've done have actually like two tiles, you know, two small tiles put in with the grout in the middle.
That's
not
it.
A
it's
great
either
plan.
There or just right underneath where you can't even see it.
Exactly.
Anyway, moving along.
Moving along. So before we get started with our show on answering John O's questions, we want to ask you to like and subscribe to our podcast and also to our channel on YouTube. We've started recording these. If you would like to see John and my's ugly mugs, as we say, we have the faces for radio. But if you would like to see us, we do have a YouTube channel. It's Handyman Pros Radio Show. It is on YouTube. And we want to get our information out to more people. It really is our goal to get this helping you save time, money, and aggravation out to more people. Because, Johnny, once again, I did a job where I changed light bulbs. And I'm sorry, folks, if you want to pay me to change light bulbs, I certainly will take your money, but we can teach you how to do many, many of these things over this format that we do. So if you would, hit our like and subscribe buttons and also go onto our YouTube channel and take a look at what we've got to offer and like and subscribe to that one too. It helps the algorithm sort out all of the, you know, the algorithm nonsense. It gets it out to the people that are looking for this kinds of things. So with that, we appreciate that. Please help us. We would like you to give us a hand. So John, I thought maybe what we would do is you could read the biggest portion of this email from John. Oh, John's up in what? Madison, Wisconsin, I guess. And if you would like to do that,
yes.
Welcome that.
So John, thanks for sending this in. I did send a quick reply back to you and let you know that we're going to talk about this a little bit on the show because it is very important. And we get a lot of questions on this, but your question is about pricing and profitability. And I do appreciate the kudos for the show. So I'm just reading here. You're a DIYer and, you know, growing your own handyman business. I made an LLC and currently have a full-time job, and I'm only doing a couple of jobs per month on the side, but would love to go full-time, ideally within the next year. But doing a lot of research, both on the technical aspects and especially on the business management financial side. And good for you on that. While I am partly pursuing this because I'd rather do handyman work and be self-employed, agreed, I currently work as a chemist at a big pharma company. I also have a family which I support solo, so I need to ensure I am making enough money to do so. Ideally, I would like to be making more even, so I've calculated that I need to charge / work to make what I am making now. And I got many benefits from the company, which I'm sure is your current company. I've even considered what I could profit by hiring employees. So you're doing that maybe a year or so going full time. It seems like you both work solo, though based on the website, you both are with the same association, and we'll be answering this and how Larry and I work together.
Right.
Also, I heard in the Knowing Your Numbers episode that you typically work around 30 billable hours of work a week and don't charge for quotes. My quick math tells me that to do this and stay profitable, you must have a rather premium charge. So let me get down to your questions. Do either of you have employees? If so, 1099 or W-2, and what do they profit your business? And if you don't mind me asking, what's your approximate rate? I'm guessing that you don't charge by the hour, but I'm guessing that you have an hourly rate you use when you quote a job. So you're just trying to gauge what I need to target to get to a spot similar to where you both seem to be, working solo but making a nice living of it and probably also supporting others. Thanks so much for the time and the great content. Okay, John. Once again, thanks for that email. And it is important you bring up a lot of good.
There's a lot there
to unpack. So, Larry, why don't you go ahead and start off at we'll look at this as building a house here. Let's start off with the foundation.
Yeah, let's start. Yeah, with this foundations. I always liken these kind of like to I'm a military history guy, so I study a lot of this stuff, and I always start off with what you would consider to be the strategic plan. Right now, John's got most of this in this case, but this is for people if you're getting started or you're thinking about getting started, have that strategic plan. John's done most of that work, it sounds like, already, but I always like to use General Marshall, who was the chief of staff right as we entered World War II, basically told Dwight D. Eisenhower his strategic plan was very simple. And your strategic plan needs to be very, very simple. You need to have a true goal. And in this case, the mission statement for Dwight Eisenhower was invade Europe, defeat the Germans. And folks, if you don't believe me, you can look that up. It's in Dwight Eisenhower's book. It actually is about the opening line of crusade in Europe. Anyway, that was Marshall's overall statement. In this case, how much money do you need to make, including your perceived benefits, et cetera, et cetera. And remember that small business is different than W-2 business, but all of that you can learn, but have that overarching thing. Below that, it all becomes tactical, right? Or it all becomes like, what do you really want to do and how do you want to structure it? This is where it gets like immense, right, John? I mean, how many different ways are there to do business, especially this particular business? There's an awful lot. So I didn't want to get into that because I thought that's where the discussion is, because John's asking some very pointed questions, and we will, get into those. Do we want to tell people like what we do? I mean, we've discussed it before, but do we want to go back over it again, John?
Yeah, sure. You know, Larry and I were old friends, and when I retired, I got into this business. Larry was kind of already into it. He's told you that story before, how he got into it. But, then we started to kind of collaborate. And we each have our own companies. We do co-marketing. And, from there, we help each other out if we need help or something like that on a job. I help Larry. Larry helps me.
Yep.
And we get paid accordingly from the customer. And that's the way it is. Now, you've asked a couple of questions. I'll let Larry keep rolling here. But, we do not have employees.
Well, and strategically, that's by design.
And that was, right? I was just going to say, that's by design because, we're older. We don't want to do that. We've kind of had our other careers.
In my case, it's been there, done that.
Not in
this business, but in a trades type business, I've been there and done that.
Yeah.
It's in my rear view. We're going to leave it at that.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not interested in doing it going forward. But that's by my choice. Right. And I'm not belaboring anybody. I've already done it and I don't need it is what it is. My numbers don't require it is the end of the story.
Right.
you know, for that particular thing. A lot of this, as you know, folks, if you don't know this, and Johnny knows this, it's really very personal. You can do this business to a whole series of different levels. It just depends on what you really want and what are you going to be willing to give up to get there. As I always like to say, in America, we can do anything. We really can, compared to other places in the world. There's you can go to whatever level you want to go, but with every step up, there's always trade-offs. You know, there's always trade-offs. So it's this balancing act, this so-called work-life balance, whatever you want to call it, but there's always trade-offs. And so you have to be very strategic. Again, this is where it's strategic thinking. You need to really figure out, like, what do I really, really, really want? In John and my cases, I work a lot more than John does, and that's because John doesn't need to. You know, I don't necessarily need to. I'm just kind of that A-type personality that if I'm not doing something, I get fidgety. Honestly, ask my wife, she'll tell you, there's always a project going on, you know. Yeah. It's like, and if it's not an outside project, it's an internal project. I'm doing something at the house. And I know, John, you do a lot of projects at your house. Yep. Too, because there's one thing, if you've worked your whole life, it's tough to stop working, right, Johnny? Yeah. I mean, it's
you need retirement. You know, if you're retired, you need something to do. Now, right. with John and Madison here, you know, that's not the case. I'd like to, you know, so John, you're in a different position than Larry and I are. Okay, you're trying to replace a job. Okay, with another job, you know, something that you kind of fell in love with here. I think it looks like that you want to be a handyman, which is great. But what our advice here, you know, as we talk about this is, you know, Larry's spot on. You know, you got to have your plan, and then it's the tactics of how you're going to get there. So I think one of the things that, you know, and I don't know what you're making right now, but you kind of have to take a hard look at how you can replace that income plus the benefits of your current company,
right?
Which can be very significant.
It can. And it sounds like, John, like you do quite well. I mean, I'm assuming, I don't really know because I don't know, it's none of our business. But just your quick description of what you do, it's got to be fairly substantial. And I just want to make a statement. So much of this depends on where you live, because different places in the world have different expenses. And in the financial independence movement, which I'm a fairly active member of, the big three are food, housing, and transportation. Those are most homeowners' biggest expenses. And the difference and I don't know anything about Madison, Wisconsin. I do know about Atlanta, Georgia. I know about some other places in New York State and some other places. Johnny knows about Chicago, you know, and John knows about Florida as well. And we have an idea of what the cost of expense of living in these kinds of places are, and they're relatively high. Atlanta's actually quite high. It's not as high as, let's say, New York City or L.A., Los Angeles, and not Lower Alabama. That's a southern thing. Anyway, you do have to gauge it as to where you live. And accordingly, pricing is set that way as well. So the cost of a handyman in New York City is actually really, really high by traditional standards. But in New York, that might not be enough to actually live on. And again, that's all a consideration. So we just want to kind of say that this is an individual, you have to really go through it yourself in your local market. So,
yes, I will say that, you know, when you look at this, John, is that, you know, you might want to do, you know, start this off. And you probably already have start this off on the weekends and your time off, you know, and see where you go, and then make the transition if you start to work into it. I mean, your plan here is that you know, you can't to replace what you have, and I can only assume what Larry just said. You know, you're probably making some decent money and the benefits and so on and so forth. And being a W-2 guy all my life, working for big companies and smaller ones, is that, you know, you're going to have to kind of break into the handyman business slowly, and then move, and then let the graphs cross, you know. And when you start to make that kind of money, then it's time to, you know, pull the plug on the other one. But, you know, you've got the right idea, because if you can start this off and maybe get, I would say, a 1099 guy, that would work for you, because it's a lot lower risk financially for you.
Less paperwork.
I would start off there, and then 1099 somebody, and maybe they can pick up during the week where you might be able to manage. But I will tell you, at the beginning of any business, you got to be there all the time. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's a tough one. It's a tough one to do a replacement on. Just sitting in my seat, I can only provide you with a couple of points of wisdom here, you know, from my experience. Right.
I can tell you that to try to do an immediate replacement is a very difficult, very, very, very difficult job to do.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. And to do a fast jump, you know.
And I guess I guess I would add, and I think I might have put this into my response, is that, you know, you need to start to Google up your way, and this goes for anybody, what handymen are getting. There's going to be a range that's going to come out. Maybe it's, you know, $50, $80 an hour. Maybe it's, you know, $125 an hour. You know, $40 to $100. I mean, it varies. You know, the range of this is huge. And I think you have to look at yourself and be honest with yourself and know what you can do and what you cannot do, which we've addressed here before. But, you know, if you're really competent in a certain area, you know, maybe you're that guy. Maybe you're the top scale, because people want the best. You know, if you're not that guy, then, you know, you got to kind of, you know, set that expectation financially.
It is definitely a value statement. We talk about it over and over and over again, but professionalism in the contracting trades, and I don't care if it's the handyman business or any of them, professionalism is number one. I had a discussion with a young mentee that I've been dealing with. He happens to be in the junk business. He's been on this show. And I was just saying, your most unique selling proposal is the fact that you're professional. And he inquired more about that. And I said, you answer the phone, you contact people when you're going to show up, you show up on time, you clean up after yourself. All of these factors are little factors, but it's what helps you get the better pricing and the better referrals and the more, you know, the better flow of time and streams. So, you know, yes, if you're going to land at the upper end of the scale, you have to look at the very minute details. Yeah. And that's really what people pay for.
So there's a lot of tips that we have on this. If you go back to some of the other shows, I will say that we've got some of our listeners who are doing what you want to do, where they're basically, you know, they're going out and doing it, but doing the actual work themselves. But also they're the manager of the whole thing.
Right.
So I think that's probably where I'm seeing that this you're thinking that's might want. Now, owning a business like that, maybe you've got three or four guys working for you. Then, yeah, then it starts to work. Right. If you can manage it, and it's. Managing guys, you know, managing in different businesses is a little bit the same, but it's a little bit different art form, because you really need to know the business. Okay. And you know, enough said about that. I think you see where I'm going, but, so
helps to work in the business a little bit to understand the real absolutely. Nuts and bolts of it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's what I'm trying to say here. So yeah. It's going to take a little while for you to get this, you know, your legs under you. Now you might be doing that. I don't know how long you've been doing it. Now you said that episode typically work around 30 billable hours a week and don't charge for quotes.
Again, these are tactics.
That's tactics.
We've found that 30 hours a week is about our average. And I say that in that I work full time doing this job, but yet I only seem to manage about 30 billable hours. I don't work weekends. So understand that's 2 days that are out of my of my scope. I do spend a fair amount of time, you know, on the front and back side of doing planning and things like that. And that's where I say, technically, those aren't billable hours. They're necessary to the job, but they're not billable hours for me. So when we do say that 30 billable hours, it doesn't mean that we're not working. It just means that that's what actually ends up coming up on the books. Again, this is tactical, right? And I know I think I've described this away. You asked, do we charge hourly? Do we charge daily? I do pricing basically on three tiers. I do it really four tiers, but two of the tiers are part and parcel of the same thing. I charge either, my favorite way to charge is a daily charge. And I do that largely because of setup and breakdown time and things like that. It allows me to go to a job for a day and or a day or days, but usually it's day, a single day. And as I always say, my favorite job is a to-do list. We try to manage our sales process to where we, and I say that's my wife and I, she handles most of the booking, but we try to manage it to where we get a to-do list of a whole list of things that takes a day. It just saves me operationally, saves me a whole lot of time and aggravation knowing I only have to go to one stop during the day and handle a whole series of things that are within my skill set, which is honestly, it's a lot, but you know, we do everything. I mean, I do everything from hanging pictures. I'm just going to go through one of my former jobs. I hung pictures. I regrouted a tile that needed some grout. We did a drywall repair. Did a little bit of electrical, meaning I replaced a ceiling fan, and then I also replaced one outlet. So I did a little bit of that. What else did I do in that job? Oh, I actually stopped a mini fridge from it had a rattle, and I found what was causing the rattle and repaired that. I hung a child swing up in that job as well. And so all of these things ended up, it was amazing. My customer was spot on. It was 8 hours almost to the minute. I was like, I'm so impressed. Because most of the time they're either short or they're long. Like, you know, they'll give me a 15 hours worth of work of to-dos, and I only get an 8-hour day. And then we just kind of roll those up. But that's a tactic for me. Now, I will charge hourly. Also, somebody's got a job that we just don't know about, we'll do it hourly. Or I also charge sometimes by the job. And when I say that by a job, if it's something really, really simple, relatively simple, I should say hanging a ceiling fan. I do have a fixed rate for hanging a single ceiling fan, provided it's at 10 feet or less. So I price three ways. It's daily or half daily. I do a half day thing because two stops is not as bad. But day, half day, and then hourly, and then by the job. I don't do much by the job work, and I don't do much of the hourly work either for me. Now, John, you do it differently. How do you do it?
No, I do it just about the same. Now, I don't really charge the like a half day thing. I do hourly. But I think what it boils down to for me is to know your, you know, kind of what you're getting into. So right. I agree with you on the fans, the ceiling fans. If you're replacing a ceiling fan.
Replacing.
Okay.
Yes.
And it's lower than 10 feet or whatever. So low. Okay. Yeah. I can go and say, yeah, I'll do that for whatever. Okay. And I'll put a price out there. But I'm still thinking in the back of my head, you know, what am I getting for the hour? And then I kind of think of, if I can get this done in a half hour and I charge an hour, then I'm, you know, my head. Okay. So, I mean, there's that kind of stuff. Walking into something that you don't know and charging, you know, just charging by the job, which I see a lot of guys doing, then all of a sudden you open up a can of worms and then it's on you.
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
So
very
if
dangerous.
I have to open up a wall or pull off some siding or something like that, and I find, you know, the whole place is rotted on the inside, that's now on me, right? And I said, well, I'm going to go out there and quote this thing for X amount of dollars, and then it's X times three. So
those are the pitfalls, right?
And that's the pitfalls. Once again, if you Google handyman in your area, you're going to find what these guys are, you know, how they're doing it. And generally what I found is that they're, you know, it's an hourly rate. Okay.
Yeah, I mean personally, like both John and I, we don't like that kind of that hourly rate thing because of the unknowns, you know. And at the end of the day, our customers do like to have a range estimate. I mean, I do tend to range a lot of jobs, but I always qualify that. That's provided that we don't find X, like wood, and in our case, wood rot is huge here in the greater Atlanta area. I mean, you can open up a wall, and John just said it, you open up a wall and all of a sudden it turns from a really simple project to this major job that you're like, whoa, you know, because it's years and years and years of neglect, for lack of a better word. And it's nothing on the people. It's like a lot of the times you don't even see this. You don't see it until you actually take it down, then you realize there was some little, you know, more or less pinhole leak from the outside, and you're like, wow, what the heck happened, you know, kind of thing. But one of the other things too is I do a lot of daily rate stuff largely because I have a fixed amount that I try to make per week. And so I break it down per week as well, and I need to achieve X amount per week. Now, when I do that in my world, for my model, because of a little bit of experience, I plan on trying to make that amount in 4 days. And I do it in 4 days because I, as I said earlier, I don't like to work on the weekends. But the other side of that story is I have found that I'm a relatively bad estimator of time. I'm going to be honest. I'm not the greatest at it. And usually if I plan on 4 days, it ends up being five. So that's a me thing, but understand that part of your world, John O, is that world can, you know, that can happen. And I try to not do it. And I do work on Saturdays as overflow for occasion. I try not to work on Sundays as much as possible. So it's not always the case because sometimes it just doesn't work out that way. But that's just our general parameters. And again, those are kind of strategic goals, but we work those into the tactical. You know, we work those into, like, when we're doing a job, you know, it's those unknown things that come back to bite you about 10 out of 10 times, you know, when you open something up and it's a surprise.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And, you know, I don't charge for quotes. Now here's, this can be a little bit of a bigger, broader discussion on charging for quotes, at least in my mind. If I have to go somewhere, you know, if I had to go a long way, you know, to take a look at a job and charge, I would probably do something like that because I've got financial responsibility to get in my car and drive an hour, you know, or a half hour. Right. Okay, so that's one thing. But if it's just around my area within 5 miles, which I generally work, then no, I will swing by because you know what? I might be going to the grocery store anyways. So I will go over there and it's not a big deal. And, you know, nobody's going to really pay for my quote, you know, and for something like that. Now, you know, once again, I agree with Larry. I give a range if I had to do a quote. So like I said, that we can go into a big discussion on quoting and estimating and things like
and
that.
And we probably will.
And, you know, we've done a show on this before, but we don't charge for quotes. Now, it sounds like you're really in the financial minutiae in some of this stuff, which is great. But just know that I think the bottom line here, John, is that you need to really understand this this business and the skill sets and what it's going to take in that environment. And I think you're going to find that you're going to be a lot more comfortable with what we've discussed here earlier, is to either take jobs or not take jobs. And once again, that's a tactic, you know, who to work for, who not to work for, probably lay that out more at some point. But you know, after you get a little bit comfortable, then you can start to feel pretty comfortable about, doing bidding on jobs, doing the quotes, you know, unless you have to drive somewhere to, you know, and you've got to make that determination. But then it becomes what your hourly rate becomes what your rate is. So all that part of that formula, you know, in my mind is kind of packed in there. So,
right. And I just want to add in one thing. I want to add in that a lot of doing an estimate and stuff, it really depends on the scope and size of the job. I mean, I am more, and I don't do these jobs hardly ever, But like, for example, if I'm going to do a $20,000 job, I'm more likely to even write to actually go inspect a quote like that, because it's a bigger dollar volume. And it's many, many, many more moving parts to that type of job than there is to a more, you know, a simpler job, say a $1,500 job. Now, I generally am not going to go spend the time, or I would charge somebody to go do a quote for, say, $1,500. Again, like John says, if it's outside my area of operation, meaning if I'm not kind of quote driving by it, I'm going to be more because there's a lot of expense involved in going out to a place between time and mileage and fuel and all of that kind of thing. So it is kind of a dance, a bit of a dance. And so, and two, don't forget to use technology. You know, the power using your phone and getting on the line with somebody in a live video format and actually having them show you the job. Many times especially on a smaller, like a $1,500 job or something like that, you can get most of the information without having to actually go to the site.
I agree with that 100%.
So, you know, optimize those kinds of technologies that are out there to use, you know, and get a good feel for what's going on. Cause a lot of it is field. Pictures don't always do it. They can be very, very helpful, but sometimes a live video, you know, or a video in general is really helpful. And we have that today. We didn't have that 20 years ago. You know, we just did, or well, whenever, a while back.
And so. I was just going to clarify, you know, you brought up a good point, you know, and the size of the job, it would determine if I'd even quote it. I mean, if somebody says, hey, I need something done like hanging a fan, we're talking about that. I'll say, hey, I'll do it for, you know, whatever. Yeah. That's not the thing here. So I hope this answers some of those questions, John. I mean, you can email us back. These are good discussions to have. All the boards on Facebook and, you know, just the internet that I'm part of, you know, this is quite common of people asking these type of questions, wanting to get into this.
I want to address both questions just directly. So number one, neither of us have employees. Although we 1099, I have hired some 1099 help on occasion because there's just some things that we've needed to do. We do 1099 help. There's a whole show, and I don't know, have we done a show on hiring employees, John? I don't think we have.
I'd have to go back, and I think we have, but
we've touched on it. Hiring employees is really a very, very difficult undertaking. I know I just want to relate my experiences. I had plenty of employees when I ran my vending company. It took me about 200 interviews to get a qualified employee, and that's a lot of investment into of time that you really don't see a return on for a very long period of time. And I would say that, and the reason that I say it in that way is that these are effectively the same type of labor force. Trying to find the right person to come to work for you in this business that has this breadth and depth of knowledge is challenging. It's really challenging because John and I were talking before the show about how we've done away with metal shops and we've done away with wood shop in school. When we were, you know, when John and I grew up, we took wood shop and metal shop because that's what you did, you know, and it was offered. Today, they don't even offer it. And a lot of our basic skills, at least many of my basic skills, believe it or not, came out of some of those high school programs. A lot of my woodworking skills, actual fine cabinetry woodworking skills, came out of woodworking shop because I was taught like how to join wood and how to glue wood and how to sand and all the kind of
all the basics.
What you and I, what John and I consider to be, John S and I consider to be simple, we were taught all those basics in high school. And unless somebody's taught you how to do that stuff, there's an awful lot there. So anyway, with that, we've become rare breeds. You know, this is talking about hiring employees. Finding somebody that has the ability to do a lot of different things is a very challenging task. It's why, as handymen and or contractors that have multi-trade knowledge, why we're actually worth a tremendous amount of money. Because find somebody.
Yeah. And that's why I would go back to, you know, if you're going to start off and do this thing, you know, you got 1099 somebody, it'd make it easy. It's going to make it a hell of a lot easier for you to fire them. And you know, you gotta be hiring, you gotta be firing all the time. And you just have to keep these guys on their toes. Complacency, especially in the, in this, with these types of folks in this business,
certainly inspect what you expect.
So Larry's right. He probably had to run through, 200 guys before he found one, and it's really expensive. Just being in the professional side of business and stuff like that, we spent, probably 6 months to train up somebody at the cost of, a couple $100,000, but that's what you got to do. And I mean, it's no different than any other business really, but you've just got to, when you're the guy running the business and your name's on the building, you got to be really, on top of it. Let's put it that way. So
my co-host gave me some advice some time ago, and he said, John, this is John, my co-host, John Singer, said, be careful what you wish for, because it might actually come true.
Right.
And honestly, in retrospective, many of the things, this has to do with some of the things we did in the RC world and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And wow, there is sage wisdom in that statement.
Yeah.
Just really think this one through, because you might actually get it. Did we interview or did we talk with the guy that had the about $5 million a year worth of business? Did we interview him, John? Yeah, we did. Mm-hmm. His big challenge was that he now feels trapped. He can't, the business isn't worth enough for him to sell. He doesn't want to really shut it down because he's got a going business, but it's also not as profitable as he would like it to be. And so he's in this terrible conundrum of what do I do? And he got down the road and now is having a hard time trying to come up with the next steps to get out. And so just be aware of that as well. Be careful once you get that flywheel, right.
That's a good point. And I'm going to leave the show on a positive note, and that is a positive note. Careful what you wish for, because it will come true. And you can get the flywheel going. And once you get this flywheel going, brother, watch out, because, I'm just going
to
piggyback.
Stopped.
Well, I'm just going to piggyback on what Larry said. We don't have trade schools anymore, really, in high school and things like that. So, nobody really knows how to do anything. So you might be in an area that people are just like, man, I am looking for people. I'm looking for, And then sky's the limit, bud. You hired a couple of guys that are really good, and you go to town, and next thing you know, you're rolling.
Yeah, you got a going concern. I think, and again, it's really specific areas. It's area specific.
And I think it's exactly. But but that's another tactic, right? And so we just wanted to bring this show out that I know we brought a lot of things to think about to this show. But don't let that hold you back. It's just that just came to mind when you read your email. And like I said, I see these questions all over the place.
Right.
So it's a good topic, and I wish you much success with it.
I do too. And the other day I was out in the yard, and there was this spaceship landed, Johnny. And the next thing I know, the guy comes out, or whatever
Watch
you want
it
to
now.
Call it.
Watch it now.
It comes out, and it shows me this email from John O. It shows me. I'm like, dude, you've been monitoring me? Like, what the heck's going on here? Anyway, sorry. We do make all this stuff up, by the way. Well, sort of. There is that part where John did get abducted. Never mind. Sorry.
Well,
all right. Anyway, with that, we're changing the way we do some things here. So please like and subscribe to this podcast and or on our YouTube channel. That's Handyman Pros Radio Show. This helps us spread the word. We are really trying to help people save time, money, and aggravation on their home maintenance and repair. And if you're a handyman, we're trying to help you succeed at the business as well. This particular show was really about being in the handyman business, not so much on helping somebody save time, money, and aggravation. But most of our content is geared more towards helping you, with tips and tricks and stuff stuff like that and things to think about and all that kind of thing. But if you do have any questions, comments, or concerns, don't hesitate. Send us an email like John did, questions@handymanprosradioshow.com, and we actually will respond, and perhaps even we'll even make a show out of it. So if you have something specific that you want answers to, really send us an email. We do answer all our emails, and we do get some show ideas out of it. We do, you know, we get some of our show ideas from the field and so forth and so on, but it really is one of those things. Johnny, what else we got?
I think that's it. I wish everybody out there, great week, and we will see you next week on the Handyman Pros Radio Show.